Someone told me that they thought today's shiur was about Sfiras HaOmer, which has to do with dating, I guess. But I was asked to share some thoughts on dating. And I guess by extension marriage and relationships. And I'll be honest, I don't like talking about this topic in a public setting, because it's a very, as I think we all know and understand and appreciate, it's a very personal and it's a very individualized process. And I think probably the greatest rule of this topic is that there are no precise rules. And what's 100% true for one person is going to be 100% not true for another person. So therefore, I want to start by apologizing, because I know I'm going to say certain things that you're going to say, he's way off. And I might say something that's way on, and there's too many variables, there's too many factors to be able to talk about this in any way that everything I'm going to say is going to resonate with all of you in a deep way. And some of the advice I'm giving you is not going to be good advice. So you'll say, so maybe don't give advice. But I was asked to speak about this topic. Sfas Emes, the Holy Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe, knew all of the Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh. He knew the entire Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh. So someone once asked him, you know, Rebbe, it's important to know the halachas, but why do you need to know the entire Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh? So he said, you need to know the entire Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh because people come to me for advice. When I give advice to people, I need to make sure the advice that I'm giving them is not against the Shulchan Aruch. That every bit of advice I give is in accordance with halacha. I don't know the Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh, so therefore this is not official advice, I guess. I'm going to share some thoughts, some ideas, some things that I personally hold to be true. And again, I ask you to listen in a way that you don't turn off your mind and turn off your heart, that you try to listen in a way that's true to your experience. And if I say something that offends you, or God forbid, doesn't resonate with you in the right way, so just discard it. And there are plenty of other approaches and other opinions as well. Rav Palm, the great Rosh Hashiva from Torah Vadas, or Avram Yaakov HaKohen Palm, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, one time spoke at an important convention, a big chinuch convention. And when he got up to speak, Rav Palm was one of the Gedolei Rosh Hashiva, a person of tremendous midos and character. And presumably they asked Rav Palm to speak because, you know, whatever he says is kilu, you're hearing it from Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rav Palm got up to speak and he said, I know many of you came today to hear Das Torah. You came to hear Das Torah. What does the Torah say about, you know, a pressing topic, a hot topic, a delicate topic? And Rav Palm said, I want to just be clear, what you're going to hear today is only Das Avram Palm. You're not going to hear Das Torah. So Achas Kam V'Kama, what you're about to hear today is not anything that resembles Das Torah. These are my opinions, these are my thoughts, this is my experience. And again, I hope it will resonate with you. When the Lubavitcher Rebbe became Rebbe, so one of the Hasidim came to him, as people often did, to seek his counsel, to seek his advice. This is in the Rabbi Tolushkin book. If you haven't read the Rabbi Tolushkin book on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you should. It's very worthwhile. And in the Rabbi Tolushkin book, it says that one time a chassid came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe to ask him. He's been going out with this girl for a period of time. And he wanted to know if he should get engaged, if it was time to get engaged. And this is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said. The Lubavitcher Rebbe said back to this fellow, he said, when it comes to this matter, there's nothing I can do to help you. And there's nothing, believe it or not, he said, that your parents can do to help you. He says there's nothing that your seichel, that your mind, can do to help you. This might sound very modernish, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, you have to listen to your heart. You have to trust your heart. Ah, but the Torah says, Lo sasur achrei levavchem. That's true. The heart has to be balanced against other things. But even the Lubavitcher Rebbe understood that when it comes to this matter, it's a very personal decision. And sometimes it's not something that you can simply put into a checklist of things. If you have X, Y, and Z, then it matches. And if you don't have X, Y, and Z, it doesn't match. The Lubavitcher Rebbe said, you can't ask your Rebbe, and you can't ask your parents, and you can't even ask your mind, your intellect. You can't even trust your seichel entirely. You have to what? You have to be able to listen in a deep way, not in a childish, immature, unhealthy emotional way, but in a deep way, that a person should be able to listen to one's heart and to understand what it is that the heart is telling you in a situation. So again, your best friend in this matter is yourself. To be able to approach it like an individual. And I think that's one of the struggles that sometimes people encounter when it comes to dating. When it comes to dating, it's very easy to see what other people are up to. And that's true in so many different aspects of dating. Whether it's time to start dating, how long I should date for, what type of person I think I want to marry. It can become very confusing. In the Tochacha, in Parshas Kisavo, The Torah describes the very horrible, the horrific scenes, almost like a Holocaust-like scene. And the Torah says that a person can go crazy. Vayisa mishuga, mishuga, mimara einecha asher tira. In the Tochacha, in the curses, in Parshas Kisavo, a person can go crazy from that which you see. And it's describing, again, looking out, imagine, we've seen photographs, Rahman al-Itzlan, horrible things. But the Skolia Rebbe, the present Skolia Rebbe, Shlita said, in one of his Svarim, Chakima Beremiza is the name of the Sefer, he said, a person can go crazy from the things that you see. It's not only talking about looking at pictures, Rahman al-Itzlan, from the Holocaust. A person can go completely crazy about what you need for yourself, what you need in your life, by looking around what other people are doing. You can make yourself completely, completely crazy. You can think there's something wrong with you. If for some person it went like this and it's not going like that for me, what does that person's experience have to do with you? Lubavitcher Rebbe, who gave advice on everything under the sun, said, I can't give advice on this. So what makes you think that your friend has the secret to what exactly what you need? Again, that doesn't mean we don't seek advice from our Rebbeim and our parents and our friends. But it means at the end of the day, you have to listen to yourself in a deep way. And what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another person. And therefore, I think rule number one, again, there are no rules, but rule number one, and again, these are in no particular order, again, it's hard for me to speak in a clear way about this topic, because again, each of you, you're an olam katan. Each person is an entire universe. But I think rule number one is you have to know yourself, and you have to know what works for you. Again, in all of those variety of decisions that you have to make, whether it's to start dating, and when to start dating, and how long to date for, and who to date, and what type of person is going to work with you, to know yourself in a deep way. The Belzer Rebbe said that there are three types of galus. There's a galus when a person finds himself or herself outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's a galus within place. There's a galus that exists amongst people, Bein Adam L'Chavero, that sometimes a Jew feels exiled from another Jew, that you can't even say Good Shabbos to another Jew because their hashkafa is a little bit different, not able to interact with them, ki'ilu they're a different, almost a different religion because they think a little differently or they dress a little differently, or that's a terrible form of galus, even worse than being kicked out of the land. But the Belzer Rebbe said that the worst galus of all is when a person is exiled from oneself. When a person doesn't take the time to get to know oneself and to figure out what works for me. What works for me? Again, there's a lot of opinions out there, and there's a lot of ideas out there, and there's a lot of ways that marriage actually works and that dating actually goes and it works. But you have to ask yourself, what works for me? What's going to make it click for me? The world stands on Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Those are the pillars of the world. The whole world is upheld by those three principles. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos, we start Pirkei Avos this week on Shabbos. Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. The Maharal of Prague said, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. Let's match it up. Avodah, Bein Adam L'Makom. Gemilas Chasadim, Bein Adam L'Chavero. No, so what's Torah? The beautiful Maharal. What's the deepest Torah in the world? If Avodah is Bein Adam L'Makom, if Gemilas Chasadim is how we interact with others, what's Torah? What's the deepest Torah you need to know? More than any Ramban and Chumash, and I love the Ramban and Chumash. More than any other Dvar Torah that you need to have a clarity in. What's the most important Dvar Torah you're ever going to hear? It's the Torah of Bein Adam L'Atzmo. That's what the Belzer Rebbe is describing. God forbid a person who's exiled from self cannot possibly begin to have a fully healthy relationship with another human being. Because if I'm not even friendly with myself, then how can I begin to engage in a process of a friendship, let alone a marriage with another person? The Ostrovtser, the holy Ostrovtser, Rav Meir Yechiel Halevi, the Ostrovtser, who's a great Chassidus Rebbe, the Ostrovtser said, when it says in Pirkei Avos, Kenei Lecha Chaver, which means acquire for yourself a friend, but you know what, before you acquire someone else as your friend, Kenei Lecha Chaver, Kenei Lecha, acquire yourself as a friend. Become a friend to yourself. Get to know yourself. Know what works for you. A person has to be able to look at oneself and to ask, what works for me? And it really doesn't matter what worked for my roommate, or what worked for my older sister, or worked for my cousin, or worked for my parents once upon a time, or my great-grandparents when Bubby got married in the shtetl, and she got married after two dates, or it was an arranged marriage. That may work for you, and that may not at all work for you. And you have to know yourself in a deep way. I'll give you an example. There was a great posek, Rav Moshe Bick. Rav Moshe Bick passed away in 1990. Rav Bick was of the opinion that a person should go on eight dates before they get engaged. Now, that was a major kula in Ravik's world, which may or may not be your world. Right? The Ravik thought 8 dates, it's appropriate, 8 dates, that's not too long, 8 dates is appropriate. And the Satmar Rebbe was so upset when he heard this psak from Ravik. He thought Ravik was giving destructive advice to people. 8 dates, Satmar Rebbe was very clever, very sharp. Satmar Rebbe said, the Torah says 8 dates is a terrible thing. Satmar Rebbe said, if you look, that when Yaakov goes to find his shidduch, right? So he's told, his parents say, his mother says, "Katzdi b'chayai," or really Yitzchak says, "Katzdi b'chayai mipnei benos ches." I don't want you to marry the benos ches. I want you to go marry someone in our family. So Sam Rebbe made a play on words. He said, "Katzdi b'chayai." I'm so repulsed. I'm so upset. I'm so disgusted. Mipnei benos ches. Someone who goes out on 8 dates. Ches. A play on the word ches. A person who goes on 8 dates. That's way too long. No. So they asked Rebbe what he thought. I don't think he ever said this to the Sam Rebbe, but this was brought. So Ravik said, you know what the difference between myself and the Satmar Rebbe is? The Satmar Rebbe gets invited to be Mesader Kedushin. It's very chashuv, Satmar Rebbe. He's always invited to Mesader Kedushin. But Ravik says, unfortunately, I'm the one they call to be Mesader Gittin. Ravik was known to be a person. And Ravik said, I have to give people the advice that I know is practical for them. And it's an important story. It's a very important story. Because at the end of the day, you have to know what works for you. You might say 8 dates is way too short, and for your worldview, that might be entirely correct. It probably is entirely correct. And if you know someone who got engaged more quickly, or it took them longer, again, you have to ask yourself, what works for me? What's practical for me? What's going to allow me to have a healthy approach to this process, and not, God forbid, to be, like the scholar Rebbe said, Vayisa Meshuga Mimara Einecha Asher Tira. To know your world, both your inner world and the world around you, the world in which you grew up. Again, whether we like it or not, whether we think it's ideal or not, there are a lot of values of the world that have crept into our life. And sometimes we have to address that. Sometimes that has programmed us in a certain emotional way. That's our reality. Now, again, is that the ideal? Maybe yes, maybe no. But sometimes you have to respond to that reality. So if once upon a time a person could get engaged after a couple of dates, and that was normal and that was healthy, and there are places where that still works, then great. But if it doesn't work for you, that's okay. And again, a person has to approach the process in a healthy way, with an understanding towards oneself. One of the challenges that I often hear about when people ask me for advice on dating is the challenge of being yourself. Even if you know yourself, even a person has a clarity in who he is or she is, and who you want to be, and what you value, right? But sometimes it's difficult. It's difficult in the process, certainly in the early stages of the process, to be true to yourself. And it is hard, and I'm not going to belittle that challenge. But it's also very, very important to try. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't put your best foot forward, right? But to try to be authentic, to try to be who you really are. Yes, you're going to try. Everyone's going to try. The people you're going to be dating, and you, when you're dating someone, you're going to try to present yourself in the best possible way, to try to impress the other person. And that's good, and that's appropriate. There's a story, the Sanzer Rebbe, the Divrei Chaim of Sanz, was married a second time later in life. He was already a big rabbi. People came to him for bracha. Someone came to him for a bracha and said, "Rebbe, I need a bracha. I need a bracha for a child." And the rabbi said, "For sure, I can give you a bracha for a child, not a problem." The rabbi told him what he needs to do. And later, the Sanzer Rebbe came to that fellow and he said, "Listen, I'm not such a big rabbi, and I can't promise you anything." He said, "But I recently got remarried, and my wife was standing there when you came to ask me for a bracha. And I want my wife to think that I'm a great person. So maybe I spoke, I want to just be clear, I can't promise you for sure that you're going to have a child, but I wanted to impress my wife." And the Sanzer Rebbe shared a medrash at that time. The Medrash says that when Shlomo HaMelech, when the Beis HaMikdash was being built, there was a bird. This is the Medrash records. Shlomo HaMelech understood the language of birds. Ramban at the beginning of Chumash, that Shlomo, with his wisdom, knew the language of animals. So Shlomo HaMelech overheard a bird saying to another bird, "You see that building over there? With one foot, I could destroy that entire building." And the other bird said, "Wow, that's so impressive, that's so great." And the Medrash says, apparently, the Medrash says that later that bird came back to that bird and said, "Listen, I can't actually destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but my wife was listening. And I want her to, you know, I want her to think that I'm a great guy. So maybe I overspoke. I just want to be honest and tell you, I don't really think I can destroy the Beis HaMikdash." So the Sanzer Rebbe said, "It's, you know, I feel the same way.
that my wife was listening. So maybe when I promised you that child, I don't want you to think that, God forbid, you know, something's terrible if my bracha doesn't come true. I'm admitting, I'm not such a great tzaddik. I can't guarantee anything. But, you know, my wife was listening. Of course you're going to try to impress the other person. But you also need to be true to yourself. Because you want to marry someone who's going to want to marry you. And you means the real you. The true you. And while it's very hard, and there's a lot of pressure sometimes in the dating process, to try to be a certain way, that you should be perceived a certain way, the healthiest thing, if you have a healthy sense of self, which you should have before you begin the process, then to try to the best of your ability. It's not always easy. But to try to be true to yourself. Again, that doesn't mean that you tell the person everything about yourself on the first date. But to be able to present yourself for who you truly are is a very, very important thing. So now you know yourself, right? And you're committed to being true to yourself. And sometimes the challenge becomes now the opposite. Because I know so much who I am and what I want that I become very rigid in what it is that I'm looking for. Rav Shach, the great Rosh Yeshiva, once came over to an older bacher in the Beis Medrash, and he said to him, How come you're not married here? Why are you delaying the shidduch process? So the bacher said, listen, Rebbe, you know, the Gemara makes a comparison that the reunification of a husband and a wife is like a lost object and its owner coming back together. So he said to Rav Shach, he said, you know, it's difficult. I'm still looking for my Aveda, I'm still looking for my lost object. We're trying to find each other. Mm-hmm. And Rav Shach said to him, the problem is you're not looking for an Aveda, you're looking for a Metzia. What does it mean to be looking for an Aveda versus looking for a Metzia? Looking for a Metzia means I want the perfect thing, I want to find the perfect deal. I want to find something that's exactly what I'm looking for. Rav Shach felt that this bacher, that this person who was older, had good opportunities, obviously, earlier in his life to work out a marriage. And he felt that his standards were unreasonable. And that the things that he was looking for was unreasonable. Now, the most important decision you're probably ever going to make in your life, not probably, the most important decision you're going to make in your life is who you marry. I think I could say that with more certainty. That's the most important decision you're going to make in your life. And it shouldn't be something where you feel that you're compromising in a way where I feel like I'm giving up on the things that I truly value. But you have to figure out, what is it that I truly value? And what are the things that I'm willing to compromise on? Because yes, like that bacher who was still sitting in the Beis Medrash, who wasn't able to find this shidduch because he was not willing to compromise on certain things that a person should be willing to compromise on. Rav Shach was giving a mussar and saying, you have to show some flexibility. My wife had a roommate in college who said, there's no way, there's zero chance. She was a very private girl, a very private person. And she said, there's no way I'm going to marry a guy who's going to be a pulpit rabbi. It's just, it's much too public. I'm not interested in that at all. That's not for me. No, who did she marry? Pulpit rabbi. And you know what? She's flourished in that. And she's become a very active Rebbetzin. And she loves it. So had she said no to that date, right, because of that thing, which she thought was the most important thing, she came to realize it wasn't the most important thing. And maybe I can play a different role than maybe I envisioned myself playing. Right? My wife had another friend whose father was a day trader. And she said, I can see his lifestyle, I don't want to be involved in that. No, guess who she married? Right? So you never know. You never know. And sometimes we get hung up on the wrong things. Maybe a profession is something that we get hung up. And maybe it's not. Again, maybe that is something that you're not willing to compromise on. And maybe that's right for you. But you have to figure out, what are the things that I'm willing... What are the things I'm willing to compromise on? What are the things that I sometimes think are important if I look down a certain perspective? But if I take a step back, you know what? There's room to negotiate that thing. And again, I'm not asking you, and no one would be asking you, and you shouldn't be willing to give up on the most important things, those things you value most. But you need to figure out, with some degree of clarity, what are those things? What are those things that I value most? What are those things that are non-negotiable, that are most important to me? Hey, what am I willing to compromise on? And what am I not willing to compromise on? Someone once came to the Chazon Ish with a proposed shidduch for a sister-in-law. And they started describing all of the qualities, all of the characters of this young man. And he was such a Talmud Chacham, and he's such a this, and he's such a that. And the Chazon Ish said, let me ask you one simple question. Will he be a good husband? Will he be a good husband? Because that's what I'm looking for. That's what my sister-in-law is looking for. Is it nice if he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham? Of course it's nice. And again, for some people, that's very important. For some people, maybe it's less important. But the Chazon Ish, at the end of the day, said, you know what really matters? Is this person going to be a good husband? Now, what does that mean to be a good husband?
So I leave it to you to figure out what that means. But that's the essential question. Is this person going to be a good husband? Is this person going to provide for me in a balanced and healthy and proper way? People sometimes, one of the words people talk about a lot in relationships is compatibility. Compatibility. What does compatibility mean? So I read an interesting study a number of years ago. It was a study done at Iowa State University. And they were trying to figure out, you know, compatibility. What makes for a good shidduch? Right? So it happens, I don't know if they used the word shidduch, but they were trying to figure out what makes for a good marriage. Well, certainly in the secular world, even more so than in the Jewish world, the divorce rate is very high. They're trying to figure out what creates compatibility. It was a whole lengthy survey about how you grew up and values and this and that. Right? Happens to be at that time, and again, this was not what they were studying. This was not a planned aspect of the study. Happens to be at the time there were four sets of twins, of male-female twins on campus. And when they ran the results from their compatibility study, guess what? There were brothers and sisters who were found to be the perfect shidduch. So let's think about this for a second. If compatibility is the key to a good marriage, so why does the Torah say that it's usur to marry certain close relatives? In some respects, it would be the most obvious shidduch. Yes, prior to Kabbalah Satorah, that was even allowed, and that was the norm. But now the Torah tells us, no, that doesn't work like that. Why? We grew up in the same community, the same values. Everything seems to match up so naturally, right? They were literally matching brothers and sisters as the optimal matches in the Iowa State University survey from a number of years ago. So why does the Torah answer it? And the answer is, because the Torah's understanding of compatibility does not mean that we're exactly the same, and that we're perfectly matched, and that we grew up in the exact same circumstances. The Torah wants us to understand that a healthy balance in a marriage is exactly that. It's a balance. And there are strengths that you're going to have. And initially you might be frustrated that your future husband, God willing, one day doesn't have those strengths. But in time you'll come to realize he has certain strengths that you don't have, and you have certain strengths that he doesn't have. And that's what creates a healthy and balanced home. If you look at the words ish v'isha, as the Gemara already seems to point out, you'll notice that there's a yud in the word ish and a hey in the word isha. Now, you might say that what I'm about to tell you is placing a lot of responsibility upon you. And of course, I want to be very clear, it goes in both directions. And what I'm about to tell you, the responsibility that you have to your husband in this particular matter that I'm emphasizing, he has many more responsibilities towards you. And even within this matter, he has many responsibilities towards you. But a Jewish woman, because Jewish women are better than men, that's a fact. That's just clear. No? Everyone agrees to that. We can take a vote. You'll win. Yeah, Jewish women are better than Jewish men. Hashem believes and trusts Jewish women more than he trusts Jewish men. That's why if you're Jewish, it goes by your mother, not by your father. Kadosh Baruch Hu trusts and empowers Jewish women to set a certain tone in the home. And while yes, it has to go both ways, and the husband and wife have to motivate one another, but there's a certain stability that a woman brings to the home. And there's a certain stability that is expressed by the yud and the hey, so to speak, in the word ish v'isha. What do I mean by that? The Gemara in Menachos says that Olam Hazeh was created with the letter Hay, and Olam Haba was created with the letter Yud. Ki beka Hashem Tzor Olam. With Yud and Hay, Hashem created the worlds. Olam Haba is created with the letter Yud, and Olam Hazeh is created with the letter Hay. Okay? Exactly what that means, it's a very deep thing. But just to say simple for a moment, Ish versus Isha. Right? Ish versus Isha. Isha has the letter Hay, Olam Hazeh. Ish has the letter Yud Olam Haba. That means men go to Olam Haba, women don't? No. Chas v'sham. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that men sometimes are a little bit in the clouds. They're a little bit in the clouds. And women have a tendency to be a lot more practical. And that's an important thing to keep in mind in the dating process. To understand that a woman has a certain ability to give stability and to ground the home and to set a certain tone in the relationship. It's interesting. The Svarim point out that the gematria of the word Isha is the same as the word Devash. The same as the word Devash. What's the nature of honey? What's the power of honey, so to speak? And again, to understand the power that you have, I've heard many times from one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Eitan Feiner Shlita. He says sometimes, maybe that's the secret of why men sometimes call their wives honey. Why? Because what's the power of honey? All right, honey, I'm home. He doesn't realize what he's saying because he's so in the clouds. But what does it mean? What's the power of honey? Honey is an interesting thing. In halacha, there's an interesting discussion about honey. When a bee is producing honey, if the sticky substance of the honey causes a bee to lose a limb,
if a leg, right, if part of the bee ends up in the honey, so now maybe the honey's not kosher anymore. So you know what halacha says? Honey literally over time has the ability to transform things. If you take something, if you take an object, you pick a rock and you put it into honey, over time it'll break it down and it'll transform it into honey. There's a certain stability, there's a certain transformative ability that Jewish women have. And that sets a certain tone. And that's something to think about. That doesn't mean that the expectation is entirely upon you to mold your husband into who he's supposed to be. Right? But again, going back to what we started with, a deep sense of self and an understanding and appreciation for who you really are will play a critical role in setting the tone in a Jewish home. Medrash tells a story that one time there was a very righteous fellow who married a woman who was not so righteous, and eventually this individual lost his righteousness. And the Medrash tells a story of just the opposite. There was a fellow who was not very impressive. A kind woman agreed to marry him and take him in, and she transformed him completely. There's a power that Jewish women have to be able to transform the husband and to set a certain tone. When Moshe saw by the Meraglim that there's a danger that's lurking, Moshe davened very much for Yeshua. But he didn't daven as much for Kalev. Why did he daven for Yeshua and not Kalev? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, because Kalev was married to the righteous Miriam. And therefore Moshe was confident that Kalev would be able to make proper decisions. Because again, because of who his wife was. Because of the tone that she would set. Because of the values that would be driven. And again, it's a responsibility. And yes, of course, it has to go both ways. And the same way that you have the ability to motivate your husband, hopefully you'll want to marry someone who motivates you, who energizes you, who's able to encourage you, and to help you to continue to grow in your Yiddishkeit. But at the end of the day, Chazal are identifying here that man is connected to the letter Yud. The floaty letter Yud of all the letters, the one letter that doesn't rest on the ground. And the Isha is the Hey, is the Akaras HaBayis, is the stability in the home. And again, to know that, and to value that, and to appreciate that, is a very, very critical thing. I said before that women are greater than men. No. Sometimes you find that women are more emotional than men, right? And sometimes that challenges a certain stability in a relationship. That men sometimes see things in a very black and white way, and women sometimes have a little more nuance and are more emotional in responding. But again, Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch says that's because of the greatness of the Jewish women. If you think about man's creation versus women's creation, you see a very, very powerful thing. Where does man come from? Where was Adam formed from? Literally from dirt. And where did a woman come from? She came from a human being. And because of that, a woman has a certain human quality that a man doesn't have. And therefore, again, to recognize that and to be able to bring that to a relationship is a very important thing. But going back to this idea of compatibility. If man is this yud, this unstable yud, this instable yud, and a woman is the hay, who's grounded, who's more practical, more rooted than Olam Hazeh. So then we come to a very interesting thing. Because the Gemara says, in Maseches Sota, that if a man and woman come together in the right way, then there's zochah to the Shekhinah. The man provides the letter Yud, the Isha provides the letter Hey, and Yud and Hey, and they form God, and God is a part of their home, God is a part of the relationship. And if, God forbid, Hashem is not a part of their home, then what are you left with? You take out the Yud and the Hey, you're left with what? Eish. You're left with a fire, it can become very destructive. So I saw the Tolna Rebbe quotes from the Chafetz Chaim. Isn't it interesting? Compatibility. Isn't it interesting that the letters that destroy the home are the letters that are very compatible? That the Aleph and the Shin that they both have is what creates something that's not healthy in the relationship? And when each one knows their place, when there's a Yud and there's a Hey, when they bring something different to the table, that creates the presence of the Shekhinah. The Chafetz Chaim said, when you're looking for a Shidduch, when a person's looking for someone to partner with, right, there has to be, again, a balance of powers. There's going to be Yud, and there's going to be Hey. And there's going to be flexibility. And there's going to be an openness. And there's going to be a willingness to appreciate the other person for their strengths, and to be willing to appreciate them for their weaknesses. And to help the person to overcome certain weaknesses. And to use your strengths to build a balanced home. The greatest marriage that ever took place was the marriage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. I saw from Rav Shlomo of Karlin in his Sefer on Chumash in Parshas Yisro, he says, don't you realize how much Hashem compromised in marrying the Jewish people? Don't you realize what a compromise that was for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us, lowly human beings, Klal Yisrael, right, to become the shidduch, so to speak, at Har Sinai in these days we're counting to Shavuos. Don't you realize on some level what a compromise that was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to do? And Rosh Shlomo Kalin said, we have to do the same thing when we get married. Again, it goes both ways. Right? The man has to be willing to be flexible towards the woman, and the woman has to be flexible towards the man. And to understand that there are basic differences that exist between men and women. And to show an openness, and a willingness, and a flexibility. That you don't have to necessarily be the same as the other person. You don't have to even understand everything about the other person. You just have to acknowledge that the person has certain things that I don't have, and I have certain things that they don't have. And there's a willingness to come together in that way. To be mechazik one another in that way. Albert Einstein's wife, Elsa Einstein, was a bright woman, right? But she was no Albert Einstein. And she once said the following. It was a beautiful comment she said. She said, you know, people sometimes ask me what I think about my husband's theory of relativity. She said, I don't know a lot about my husband's theory of relativity. Right? I don't fully understand my husband's theory of relativity. But I do know my husband, and I know he can be trusted. I know he can be trusted. It's such an important idea when it comes to a relationship. Do I trust the other person? Do I see that the person who I'm with, even though I don't understand everything about how they work, and I don't fully think the way they do on every issue, and there are going to be differences, right? But do I trust the other person? Can I answer the question that the Chazon Ish asked that fellow? Is this person going to be a good husband? Are the core values, the things that are most important, are they present at that time? And to understand, in a very deep way, that every single marriage that comes together is really a tremendous miracle. And I wanna maybe conclude with this point and then take a few minutes for questions. To realize that when it comes to a marriage, and this is also, again, one of the great frustrations sometimes in the dating process, when it doesn't go as smoothly as a person hopes for, right, that a marriage is literally a nes. Whether it's the Gemara's comparison of a shidduch like Kriyas Yamsuf, or whether it's the fact that in other places, Chazal seem to refer to marriage literally as a miracle. When Eliezer is on his way to find the shidduch for Yitzchak, he experiences kfitzas haderach. Chazal say he was able to travel in this unusual pace, in a miraculous way. So the Sfarim ask, why did he need a miracle? Take a few extra days to get there. What was the rush to complete that shidduch between Yitzchak and Rivka? And the answer is, there was no rush. And it was going to happen in the right time. But Hashem made a miracle on the way to form the first real Jewish marriage. The first child born to Jewish parents, Yitzchak, that the first real Jewish home being built from the ground up of Yitzchak and Rivka should come about in a miraculous way. You know why? Because every marriage is a nis. Every marriage is a nis. And therefore, just like when it comes to nisim, when it comes to miracles, we don't expect it to happen on our terms, we expect it to happen on the Kadosh Baruch Hu's terms, the same thing is true in a marriage. The same thing is true in shidduchim. Sometimes a person just has to understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu does miracles in strange ways sometimes. And when you least expect it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes throughout Jewish history we've seen, Hashem surprises us in unusual ways. And a person has to have emunah, and a person has to have patience, and a person has to trust and give HaKadosh Baruch Hu benefit of the doubt. Like Rav Aaron of Karlin said, if there's a mitzvah to give a basar v'dam, a human being, benefit of the doubt, all the more so, there's a mitzvah to give HaKadosh Baruch Hu benefit of the doubt that he knows what he's doing. My wife had a friend in college, she was very, very close to getting married. And when they ended up breaking up, shortly before they nearly got engaged, it was very devastating. And years went by. Years and years and years went by before my wife's good friend got married. And I can only tell you, the simcha, years later, when she did get married, and how right the guy that she married was for her, and how appropriate it was. And at the time, it was very difficult. And all those years were frustrating, and they were difficult. But when it finally clicked, when the time came for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to perform that miracle of bringing together two very different things, a yud and a hey, in such a beautiful way, everyone who was at that wedding understood that this is right. This is how it's supposed to be. This is exactly how it's supposed to be. And therefore, a person has to have patience. A person has to have emunah in the process. A person has to go on a bad date and come back and say gamzu l'tova, not just because it's the right thing to say, but because be'emes, gamzu l'tova. To be able to say, there's also something good here. Maybe the good thing is that the person who you went out with was totally not for you, might be the person who's right for your friend, and that friend might marry this guy, and then together the two of them will think of the person who you're supposed to marry. Maybe to daven for someone else. Not because Rashi says that if someone else is sick, and you have that same illness, if you daven for them, then it works for you first. Not to use it as a school or as a trick, but to do it b'emes. Because ani man b'munah shleimah, that in the right time Hashem is going to help me find the person who's right for me. And therefore, I can daven for my friend, and I don't feel any pressure. I won't feel any more pressure if my friend gets married first, if my friend gets engaged first. Because I'm a healthy person who's able to look at myself and be able to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing. And everything's going to come about the way it's supposed to come about in the right time. To be able to see the fullness of that process and to trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that process. I'll just say one final point because I think it's important. I meant to mention it earlier. Then I'll take some questions or comments, or you can throw things if you want, whatever's appropriate at the end of this 35-minute session together. Sometimes the pressure that comes about is inherent to the process, and sometimes we put the pressure upon ourselves. And one of the things that I think sometimes people lose themselves in is when they think about marriage, they think about a wedding. A wedding is a tremendously exciting thing. And my wife always tells a story, and I cringe every time I think about the story, and I cringe every time I share the story, but it's important to share, and I have to say it, because it's an important point. My wife told me that years ago, she remembers that one of her friends came back from a date, and she'd been going out with a guy for a period of time, and she decided that they were going to get married. She was very excited. They were hoping to get engaged. And this girl walks into the room, and she says to her roommate, she says, "It's so exciting. I'm going to be a kala." And she starts singing, "Oh, Odia Shama." So one of my wife's friends, here she was, like on this high, and one of my wife's friends said to her, "That's not a marriage. That's a wedding. That's a wedding." And it's very important to realize that. Because when your older sister, or maybe even your younger sister, or when your roommate, right, or someone else who you always thought you'd get married before is actually getting married before you, and there's tremendous, tremendous excitement surrounding the wedding, make sure you realize a wedding is something that lasts for 6 hours. If you're lucky, if they don't shut the lights on you, they don't throw you out. The band's willing to play a few extra songs. Right? But to be able to say, yes, of course, a marriage is also very exciting. But a marriage is an avodah. A marriage is a different thing. And not to lose oneself, not to make bad decisions, and not to focus on the wrong things, whether it's with regard to starting the dating process, or whether it's getting engaged before a person is ready to get engaged, right? Because of the excitement of getting to the wedding. The wedding is lovely, the wedding is beautiful, and the wedding is very holy. Right? But the wedding is, again, only one very, very small piece of the process. And it's much more important to try to see the big picture and to take some of that pressure off of the wedding, and off of maybe some of the superficial excitement that surrounds those early stages of marriage, which sometimes, again, creates a lot of the unhealthy pressure that people feel, to allow yourself to have clarity in the process. Okay, there's a lot more to say, a lot more to think about, but I'll open the floor to questions if anyone's interested in asking questions, comments, anything. Mr. Cement, maybe you should break the ice just because from your life experience. Yes. Sure. I would much rather I'm happy to speak to any and every one of you privately, offline about this. I think it would be a much more productive conversation. And yes, we can be in touch and continue this conversation, and we could try to make some shidduchim. Yes, please. Sorry, my hearing's not so good. You could just speak up a tiny bit.
In terms of what?
Yeah, listen. It's important. Yeah, please. Right. Right. So again, that's a very personal balance. It's appropriate for a person to make a shtadlus in this area, as it is in any area. And a person should use the resources that are available. And sometimes there are challenges that people have in trying to find opportunities to date. And you should use the resources and the networks that are available to you. And you should turn to people. But it's important also, when reaching out to people, to turn to people who, again, this is my opinion, who really know you, or who you really trust. Sometimes people are set up
for the wrong reasons, and sometimes people are set up by people who don't really know what they're doing, and sometimes that could become painful in the process. So yes, I think a person should reach out to those who can help, and if it's nothing to, it's appropriate, and I don't think it's, God forbid, embarrassing in any way to reach out and to let people know that what you're looking for and exactly what it is that you're seeking. But yeah, there has to be at the same time a measure of calm, and that's why I like that line so much from Avraham of Karlin, to give HaKadosh Baruch Hu the benefit of the doubt, that sometimes for some people it goes very quickly, and for other people Hashem says, you know what, you need to, it's not meant to be right now, and when the time is right, the time will be right, and to be able to maintain a certain calm, not to become panicked when it comes to putting in one's hishtadlis. But of course, I think it's entirely appropriate for a person to try to put in one's hishtadlis and to network and to seek advice and guidance from people who can help and who you trust. I know it's a little generic, but I think it's true. Right. What should the man bring to the table? The man should bring a lot of things to the table. The responsibilities that a husband has, again, talking just from a straight out of the Shulchan Aruch perspective, right? The man has a lot more responsibilities to provide for his wife than the wife has to provide for the husband. And again, that basic element of trust is a critical thing. That you should be able to look at the person who you're going to hopefully spend the rest of your life with and say that I trust that this person is going to provide for me. And it is achrayus. I want to be very clear about this. I have a hard time understanding, right, for women who are supporting their husbands. And again, I know I don't want to get into the whole question of a person who's learning in Kolel and a wife who's supporting. But the simple reality of the ksuba is that the husband has a responsibility to provide a financial and physical stability and security for the wife. The point I was trying to make is that there's a certain emotional stability and a certain religious stability that Chazal are telling us, and again, from my life's experience, seems to indicate that the wife can, in many respects, because of a certain healthy, emotional, grounded type of reality that a woman has, is able to set a certain tone within the home. But again, the trust and the sense of achrayus that a husband should bring to the table, I think, is very, very important. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, but I think, unfortunately, for many people, it is something that's a little bit lost on the world today. A lot of young men who I speak to, it takes often a bit longer than maybe once upon a time to take on that achrayus. It's interesting. In Pirkei Avos, it says that 18 is the age for marriage. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said what was 18 in the times of Chazal is much later today. That for men, it takes often a bit longer for them to mature, to be able to understand the responsibility. It used to be a person got married, a man understood. He has a certain achrayus, responsibility to his wife and to his family. And that means doing whatever it takes to provide for one's family. To be able to say, someone once told me, a young woman once told me that her husband was hoping to go into chinuch, and she was talking to her father about it, and the father had certain concerns, because, it's not the most lucrative profession in the world, necessarily. And this young woman turned to her father, and she said, listen, what I can tell you about the person who I'd like to become engaged to is that this is what he'd like to do with his life. And he's very talented. I think he'll do a good job at it. But I also trust him enough to know that if he can't provide for our family in this way, he'll do whatever it takes to make sure that he can provide for me. And that's what a parent of a young woman wants to be able to hear, that there's a certain deep sense of achrayus, a practical sense of achrayus that a husband brings to the table. And I think you have a right to expect that, and that's what it says in the Ksuba, that a husband's prepared to give the shirt off his back to provide for his wife. And I think it's important to date someone who you see as someone who's trustworthy and responsible and mature and is willing to take that achrayus. I think it's a very important thing. Anyone else? We'll call it a day. My email address is moshetsuweinberg@gmail.com. You can email me your questions, comments, and we'll, God willing, we'll continue the conversation offline. Okay, thank you very much. I hope this was meaningful, and I hope I didn't offend anyone with anything I said.